Philippines records more cases of COVID-19 mutations, including the more transmissible Delta variant. The Okta Research Group continues to see a surge in coronavirus cases in the provinces. We'll be speaking to Dr. Guido David about that later on in the program. Manila's envoy to Washington says the Philippines will have more than enough coronavirus vaccines for its entire population for the upcoming delivery of Moderna and Pfizer doses. And demonstrations erupt once more in Brazil, where the COVID-19 death toll has surpassed 500,000. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with this story. The Philippines records more cases of COVID-19 variants, including the Delta variant that was first detected in India. Rafael Bosano now joins us with details. Raf, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. The Department of Health has detected 4 more cases of the Delta variant, or the B.1.617.2 variant, which is a variant of concern first detected in India. In a statement released this morning, the DOH said 3 of the 4 additional Delta variant cases are returning overseas Filipinos from MV Eastern Europe, which is a ship docked in South Korea. Now, after testing positive, they were repatriated last June 3. 2 have completed the 10-day isolation and have already been discharged, while 1 is still admitted in a hospital here in the National Capital Region. The 4th Delta variant is also a returning overseas Filipino who arrived from Saudi Arabia last May 24. And after completing isolation, the ROF was tagged as recovered on June 10 and is now under strict home quarantine. Now, aside from the Delta variant, the DOH also reported the detection of 14 additional Alpha variants, or the B.1.1.7, which is a variant first detected in the UK. Now, 21 additional beta variants, which was originally detected in South Africa, and 1 theta, or the P.3 variant, first detected here in the Philippines. Now, all of them, except for the P.3 variant, are considered variants of concern because of increased transmissibility based on reports and studies. The DOH, the Philippine Genome Center, and the UPNIH say that they will continue biosurveillance activities as the cases in Visayas and Mindanao continue to rise. Now, the report of these additional variants come nearly a month since the DOH, PGC, and UPNIH last reported the detection of variants of concern. They were citing logistical problems as the reason behind the delay in genome sequencing, but Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Bejere said that additional kits are set to arrive in the country. 108 million worth of grants will be arriving next week. These are reagents which are being used in genome sequencing. They are expected to arrive this week, and these supplies will last until the end of the year. So the DOH assured the public that the 750 target of samples to be surveyed for other variants of concern will go on, and we will not experience any more problems of delay until the end of the year, Carmina.
All right. Raf, did the DOH tell you about contact tracing efforts post the discovery of these new variants?
That's something that is still being a challenge, not only for the variants, but we've heard from last week that the DOH and other authorities continue to admit that contact tracing is a problem here, and is a problem that continues to be experienced, because the original target in urban settings is 1:37, but the DOH told us last week that for every 1 positive patient, they are only able to trace 6 individuals, or 6 close contacts. Now, the DOH did not tell us in a briefing that just finished a while ago whether the contact tracing for these Delta variant cases have been undertaken. But what we do know is that most of them have already recovered. One has died, but this death was recorded weeks ago. So and there's only one case that is still admitted in a hospital. Hopefully, the DOH will be able to tell us more in the coming fora whether or not they have been able to detect more close contacts of these Delta variant cases.
Yeah, because, Raf, recovery is one thing, but we're talking about highly transmissible variants here. And indeed, contact tracing is the key if you want to get ahead of this virus. But you're right when you said that we're still having problems with that more than a year into this pandemic response. When's the next bulletin, Raf? Did the DOH say anything about that?
The next bulletin for the variants of concern and other variants of interest is expected once the DOH and the UP NIH, as well as the Philippine Genome Center, have already finished the genomic sequencing of other samples. These samples that were presented by the DOH came from the 45 samples that they have been able to collect. The 45, the low number, is again, of course, of logistical issues. These are the reagents which they lack, but now they say that they have been assured of more reagents that will arrive this week. So hopefully, once the samples return to the normal number of 750, they'd be able to release reports weekly if everything goes well, Carmina.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rafael Busano, there joining us on the line. Take care, Raf. Keep safe. Moving on, the DOH report comes just as the country is set to implement a shorter quarantine period for fully vaccinated inbound travelers. This will take effect tomorrow, Tuesday. Returning overseas Filipino workers are also covered by the new policy. Under the new protocols, fully vaccinated travelers will only need to go on a 7-day facility-based quarantine instead of 10. A swab test is only needed if they exhibit COVID-19 symptoms. Meanwhile, officials are still working on a protocol for authenticating the vaccination of OFWs to receive their shots abroad.
We've already assigned that to a small group in the IATF, led, of course, by the Department of Foreign Affairs, and other members of the IATF. We hope that they will be able to report to us already sometime this week about anong klaseng procedure ang pwedeng gawin ng ating Bureau of Immigration and Bureau of Quarantine, for instance, to verify that indeed si Pedro de la Cruz was really fully vaccinated. Anong klaseng proof or evidence ang kinakailangan niya at anong kailangan niyang gawin bago pa man siya pumunta ng Pilipinas to have some documents ready so that pag landing niya sa bansa, mapakita niya yung documents, then it's easy for our immigration officials or quarantine officials to say, okay, yes, you're fully vaccinated.
Two new areas in Quezon City placed under a special concern lockdown. Over the weekend, the local government tightened restrictions along two streets of Barangay San Martin de Porres. That's after 16 active COVID-19 cases were reported in that area. Also, on 14-day lockdown, a compound in the village of Apolonio Samson, where 23 active infections have been identified. A total of 8 areas in the city are currently on a special concern lockdown as it deals with over 1,700 active cases. The Philippine Health Department logged 5,803 new COVID-19 cases on Sunday. This brings the country's total tally to 1,359,000. Active cases stand at 57,679. 84 more deaths were also reported, pushing the coronavirus death toll to 23,621. The surge of COVID-19 infections in the provinces continues. In Iloilo City, some patients are being brought to hotels as hospitals run out of rooms. based on data by the Okta Research Group. Iloilo City was one of the areas that saw a spike in coronavirus infections this past week. Mayor Jerry Treñas appealing for more medical equipment and COVID-19 vaccines from the national government.
If you are feeling a certain state of normalcy in the NCR, we are not feeling that. Only 1.86% have been fully vaccinated. We have a long way to go. If we do not have enough, then we do not give protection.
Aside from Iloilo City, the Okta Research Group also saw spikes in cases in Valencia in Bukidnon, Cebu City, Davao City, and Polomolok in South Cotabato, the health department has said. Visayas and Mindanao will be getting 55% of the country's new vaccine supplies. Aside from a lack of vaccines, Vice President Leonard Robredo says some parts of the country need to ramp up testing.
Marami yung nangangailangan i-test na hindi ka agad natetest. Yung problema nito, hindi ka agad nakukuha yung results. Parang kahit nag-positive ka na, pinapauwi ka muna. Mm-hmm. Pati yung contact tracing, nagiging mabagal. So, problema yan sa amin sa Camarines, so problema din sa Albay.
And let's get more details now on the latest COVID-19 data from Dr. Guido David of the Okta Research Group. Dr. David, nice to see you again and welcome to the program.
Hi, Carmina, and hello to the viewers and listeners of PNC.
All right. So when we take a look at the numbers of your recent study, the numbers aren't comforting at all. Dr. David, what concerns you the most about these latest findings?
Well, it's fairly comforting in NCR. We're still seeing a decrease in cases. In fact, now we're averaging just 733 cases per day in the whole of NCR. And just to compare, before the surge, we were averaging 500. So we're almost at the level of the pre-surge levels right now in NCR. Although we're still seeing some minor spikes in parts of Calabarzon. But right now it's concerning to see rising cases and hospitals being overwhelmed in some parts of Mindanao and Visayas.
Yeah, because when you talk about critical care capacities and hospital utilization, you know, not all are created equal. And when you look at all these provinces, they don't compare to what we have here in the NCR. So what's going to be your prognosis there? What's the projection if things go unchanged?
Well, right now, I mean, there's really a critical phase already in Iloilo City because their healthcare, their hospital beds are at 90% full and ICUs are 100% full. So they definitely need to add more hospital beds and ICUs in these areas to keep up with the cases that are continuing to pile up. So right now, there's some small glimmer of hope that, you know, the cases have already reversed trend in Iloilo and Bacolod, although, as I mentioned, the hospital utilization is still high, but cases are continuing to rise in some parts of the country. For example, Davao City, their ICU utilization is already high at around 95%, even though their healthcare hospital bed utilization still within these manageable levels at 67%. So if things don't improve in these areas, well, we could be seeing a further, you know, overwhelming of hospitals in many LGUs. And this is definitely a concern because, you know, some areas, I mean, Metro Davao will start to have, you know, fewer beds available for these cases that are continuing to, you know, become infected with the virus.
Are you also, is it a foregone conclusion, Dr. David, that if things go unchanged, that ultimately this will lead to a higher number of deaths?
Well, definitely deaths will follow. Right now we're seeing a high ICU occupancy, and that means more severe cases compared to the past. And this is the product of some of the variants of concern that have entered the country. For example, the alpha and the beta variants that we know are prevalent in the Philippines. Generally, they lead to more serious infections. And you know, that will definitely lead to more deaths as the numbers increase.
Here's the thing, though, Dr. David, could this have been prevented? We knew what was happening here in the NCR plus area. We knew it was just a matter of time before it crosses borders. Could this have been prevented?
It probably could have been prevented. I'm not aware of the actual implementations at the borders. We could be more strict with our border controls so we don't let LGUs and the provinces, so we don't allow them to have the virus carriers enter their regions if we have stricter implementations, at the minimum, stricter implementations of border controls. Right now, we're also looking at the international border controls. This is very important because although the Department of Health has detected new cases of the Delta, the more contagious Delta variant, we still don't have evidence that there's community transmission right now in the country of this more infectious Delta variant, but we are very concerned about this Delta variant.
Let's get into that right now. How much of a game changer will it be if we see proof, once we see evidence that there has been community transmission already of this Delta variant? Dr. David.
Well, this is a huge game changer, Carmina. We are very, very, very concerned and very worried about this Delta variant. And this, just to give you an idea, in the UK, the Delta variant is already 99% of their sequenced cases, and it used to be much less. So that means it has outcompeted the UK variant, which is the Alpha variant, and the Beta variant, which is the South African variant, which is what we have in the country. We have the Alpha and the Beta variants here. But in the UK, they also have vaccinated, I think, more than 50% of their population, but they're still getting an increase right now in cases, and mainly due to the Delta variant, because that's 99% of their cases. So what that indicates to us is that the vaccines were probably very effective in containing the spread of the alpha and the beta variants, but the reduced efficacy of the vaccines for the in combating the Delta variant may have led to a further increase in cases of the Delta variant in the UK. So, I mean, almost 100% Delta variant. So if it enters the country, we are very concerned that the NCR will have a surge that will be even worse than what we saw last March.
And that's also mainly because we haven't really caught up in our vaccination rollouts.
Well, yes, that will add to the challenge. But as I mentioned, even the UK, where they have vaccinated 50 to 60% of their population, they're still having problems with this Delta variant. And we're also seeing other countries in Asia having problems with this Delta variant, and that includes Indonesia and Thailand, among others. So this is definitely a game changer. Our best strategy right now is to prevent this Delta variant from entering into community transmission. So yes, we're not so concerned that some OFWs have been found to have carried the virus, as long as they did not infect other people. But once we have community transmission and it explodes, like I mentioned, you know, cases will continue to rise, and you know, we hope we can accelerate the vaccination process. I know we're expected to receive a huge volume of
soon.
Vaccines from Pfizer, yes, soon.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can accelerate that, because that will help us in a way mitigate the spread of the Delta variant.
Yeah, but with things stand, the way things stand right now, Dr. David, you have that threat of the Delta variant, but then you have little to none genome sequencing that's being done, and also little to none contact tracing that's being done. That's like going into war blindly. At least when you talk about the UK experience, they sort of had those in place as well. So maybe they kind of knew they that's added arsenal. But in our case, how will that complicate matters even more for us?
Well, in fairness, Carmina, we work with some LGUs, so we know that there is some there is contact tracing being done, but I can't speak for all the LGUs in the country, and I don't know the level of contact tracing that we are at right now nationally. I mean, I can speak for some, maybe a few LGUs in the NCR. And as far as testing, well, you know, testing is still sort of a challenge because we're getting high positivity rates in some areas, like in Mindanao. And besides, we're getting, you know, 20% upwards of positivity rates. And well, as far as, I'm sorry, what was your other point aside from
genome sequencing,
I believe they're already, I think they ran out of reagents, but I think they're in the process of doing the genome sequencing for cases in Mindanao, but I think it will take a while to get these sequences, probably 2 to 4 weeks. So we hope that, you know, within that time period, we can still contain the spread of the virus in these regions.
Tell us about what is happening in Davao, where the numbers continue to increase. What's happening there, Dr. Guido?
Well, unfortunately, Carmina, I don't have information on the ground. But what we could see is that the cases are continuing to increase. And in fact, last week, they had a single day report. I mean, this came from Davao itself, Davao City, 482 cases in one day. And this is the highest it ever tallied in one day. So, I mean, throughout the whole pandemic period. And in fact, they never had more than 300 in one day. And now they had 482. Now they're still tallying or reporting about 200 cases per day on average.
Yeah.
The average is about 250, I think. So it's definitely a concern. I mean, relative to their population, it's still not as much as, let's say, in Iloilo City. But it is still a significant number. And from what I'm hearing, some people are saying that, you know, it's the entire region and cases are, you know, going to Davao City. But, definitely they were okay before this, some months back. So it might be some LSIs or some, I don't know, returning Filipinos that brought the virus there. But once we have an explosion of cases, what we know is that in, for example, in NCR, in Metro Cebu, and in Metro Davao, once we have an explosion of cases, it's really hard to stop the spread of the virus, and we really need, you know, a really stringent measures to stop the or to mitigate the spread. And it usually takes at least 2 months to stop or to curb the spread of the virus, and that's what we saw in NCR and Cebu City. We hope that they can do it quickly, but that's been the trend.
Well, last week the average of cases that was down 3%, if I'm not mistaken. Will this change in the coming weeks? Are we because of how things stand now, and also with the threat of the Delta variant? What's your projection?
Well, it's a little unstable right now, and the good news is that we're starting to see a decrease in cases in Iloilo City, for example. Dumaguete had a really serious surge, but now they're seeing a decrease in cases. So some of these smaller LGUs in the provinces, they're able to mitigate the spread more quickly. For example, even Naga City, the cases are starting to decrease. So we hope that they can continue to continue this process of, you know, decreasing the number of cases in their areas. Some of these areas were not as concerned, especially the smaller LGUs. So we're really focused on the larger LGUs. Like I said, Iloilo City is starting to decrease. Now in Cebu City, we're also seeing a spike in cases. It's not yet at the point that it's overwhelming, but it's starting to increase again. And it's a little concerning. So definitely that means we should not let our guards down. Especially now. I mean, things have improved in the NCR, but all over the country, it has not yet improved. So I don't think this is the time to be, you know, to totally relax our border controls. because, you know, and especially our international border controls, we should really, really make sure this Delta variant does not enter the country. I mean, that's the number one. And then for these LGUs like Davao City, you know, should, you know, increase our testing and all those things. I don't have knowledge on what's happening on the ground, but these are the general, you know, guidelines that the government takes the steps to battle the pandemic.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Guido David of the Octor Research Group, always a pleasure talking to you. Continue to keep safe. Take care.
Take care. Thank you. Have a good day, Carmina.
You also. All right, the first 20 million doses of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine, we talked about this earlier with Dr. David, well, that's arriving in the Philippines on June 27. That's this Sunday. That assurance coming from Manila's ambassador to Washington, Jose Manuel Romualdez. Now, of that number, 13 million will go to the government. The remaining 7 million will go to the private sector. Coupled with the 40 million dose deal signed with Pfizer, Romualdez said, the Philippines will have more than enough jabs for the entire population.
Definitely 27 dadating dyan. 11 o'clock ng gabi. Wow. Ang dating dyan. So hopefully the week of the 28th, tuloy-tuloy na yung Moderna. At saka yung Pfizer, marami na rin dadating sa atin dyan. Mga 40 million na pinirman na ni Secretary Galvez. At yan kasama niyan sa COVAX facility. Yung sinabi ni Secretary Galvez na we will have more than enough in the next couple of months. Totoo yan. We really are, this time talagang tuloy-tuloy na tayo.
Pero yung pa rin, ha? We wanted to, ano, to assure.
We're going to take a break now. Coming up, who's doing more household work in this time of the pandemic? The men or the women? We'll tackle that when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. Our Civil Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines records more cases of COVID-19 mutations, including the more transmissible Delta variant. The Octa Research Group continues to see a surge in coronavirus cases in the provinces and warns of a further overwhelming of hospitals if the situation doesn't improve. Manila's envoy to Washington says the Philippines will have more than enough coronavirus vaccines for its entire population with the upcoming delivery of Moderna and Pfizer doses. And demonstrations erupt once more in Brazil, where the COVID-19 death toll has surpassed 500,000. Back with more news, fresh calls for the ouster of President Jair Bolsonaro as Brazil's COVID-19 death toll passes the 500,000 mark. Experts also warn of a worsening outbreak due to delayed vaccinations. More in this report.
On the day that Brazil surpassed 500,000 deaths from COVID-19, thousands took to the streets to express their anger at the government's handling of the pandemic. Protests were staged on Saturday in at least 44 cities in 20 states across the country. The protesters accused President Jair Bolsonaro of genocide in his pandemic response, and they want him out of office. His government has refused to back social distancing measures, and the country has been slow to acquire vaccines. Pharmaceutical maker Pfizer said it got no response to early offers to sell vaccines to the government between August and November last year. This female protester says she has lost friends and people have become orphans, fatherless, motherless and childless because of Bolsonaro. And the outlook remains stark. Health Ministry data shows that just 11% of Brazilians are fully vaccinated and 29% have received a first dose. Epidemiologists warn that with winter arriving in the southern hemisphere and new variants of the coronavirus circulating, deaths will continue to mount even if immunizations gain steam. Intensive care units are already running close to capacity across the country. This week, new confirmed cases in Brazil accelerated to more than 70,000 per day on average. Brazil has the world's second highest death toll after the United States.
The mayor of Iloilo City urging government to provide more COVID-19 vaccines outside the national capital region. Mayor Jerry Trena says Iloilo City has only vaccinated 40,000 individuals, or less than 10% of its population, as it struggles with a surge in COVID-19 cases. The mayor is blaming the Octa Research Group for the uneven distribution of vaccines in the country.
The city has vaccinated already almost 600,000. The disparity is so huge, and LGUs outside the NCR are very much affected. Because of this recommendation of OCTA to allocate 90% of the vaccines only to NCR plus 8. It's about time that we should listen also to the local leaders. It's the local leaders who understand what is happening to us. It's not OCTA who understand what's happening to our constituents. We know how many people are being infected every day. Mga Filipino rin kami. Hindi kami kasama sa NCR plus 8, pero Filipino rin kami. Sana marinig nyo rin ang tawag namin. Marinig nyo rin ang aming iniingi. At sana matulungan rin kami. Kasi Filipino rin kami.
Trenas also called on government to provide more medical resources, including personnel.
Ang kailangan namin tulong. Anong tulong na kailangan namin? Kailangan namin ng medical frontliners. Kailangan namin mabayaran ng mga ospital ng PhilHealth. Kailangan namin ng mga equipments like ventilators and high flow oxygen cannula. Kailangan namin ng vaccine. Kailangan namin additional personnel. Huwag naman sana kunin. Ngayon na kailangan namin ang mga doktor at mga nurses sa mga ospital, huwag naman sana sabihin sa amin na wala na kaming pera.
Oxfam just released its latest household care survey, wherein they found out that Filipino men have been putting more care work hours because of the pandemic. But Filipino women still carry most of the burden. Let's talk about the impact of this survey. Joining us now, Lot Felisco. She is country director of Oxfam Philippines. Lot, nice to see you again. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Carmina. Nice to see you again. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about this survey. Very interesting. Tell us what you found out in the survey that really showed you how the pandemic has changed the dynamics within the Filipino household.
Yes, Carmina, sure. Let me just backtrack a little bit and maybe give a bit of background, because people ask us sometimes, why is Oxfam, that's supposed to be working on poverty and inequality, why are you working on this issue of care and domestic work? And we explain that it's really an issue of inequality and poverty. One, because women have been shown to disproportionately carry the burden of care and domestic work. So that's an issue of inequality. And this disproportionate burden on women actually limits them from economic opportunities, livelihood options, because they are so tied to care and domestic work. So in a way, it's an issue of poverty as well. So we've been working on this for several years now, but we've seen really some changes because of the pandemic. As it happens, we did a survey in early this year. So it was the height of the pandemic. And the survey showed us that a big proportion of men, almost two-thirds, reported that they were doing more hours of care work than before. But yes, women still do the larger portion of care work. But we're seeing a shift in that men are doing more. And this leads us to then to the question of, is this a shift that we hope is here to stay? What can we do to make sure it's here to stay?
Yeah, but let me just follow up on your explanation a while ago about the disparity of it all. How do you reconcile that with a very Filipino notion that women are the light of the home? Ilaw ng tahanan, di ba? Yan ang tawag natin. And that's why, you know, this has been used sort of as a justification that women should only be at home, should only stay at home, and should do nothing else but care for the family.
You're right, Carmina. I'm saying that those, you know, like traditional concepts, they can be used as justifications and mask the reality of really what's there. Because even as we say that women are yun nga ilaw ng tahanan and their work is in the home, actually we know women are more than that, right? Women work in the formal economy. Women work on the farms. They're farmers, they're fishers, they're workers in the formal economy, in the informal economy. In fact, during the pandemic, we've seen women really stepping up to do the income generation that has been lost in the formal economy, mostly by men. So we know women do more than that, and yet they also do a disproportionately large amount of the care and domestic work that's needed to keep all other work possible, because that's what it is, right? Care and domestic work is the work that's needed so that everyone else in the family, in the household, can do other quote-unquote productive or paid work.
How do you make this more than just a manifestation of the pandemic and more like the norm, even post-pandemic?
That is the challenge, really. And that's what, you know, Oxfam, we've been working on for many years now, in especially in communities that we've been working in, for instance, in Eastern Visayas and in Mindanao. You hit the nail on the head. It's about changing norms. It's about changing people's perceptions and views. For instance, changing how care work is viewed as not really work. It is work because it takes time and it takes people's energy, and it's largely women's time and energy that goes into that. So first of all, we are working so that communities, leaders, and we ourselves, women and men, and our families recognize care work as work. Secondly, that this work is therefore supported both by policy and also investments, because it's not just a woman's burden to take on that work and do it effectively. There has to be support in terms of policy and programs. And then that this work will be redistributed across different members of the family and the community. And to do all that, underpinning all of that change is really a change in how people view it, and an acceptance that this is not just women's work. And I think that's the opening that the pandemic sort of gives, because as more men have been at home and taken on more of the care work and talking more about it, then it's becoming more visible. And in a way, hopefully, it's becoming more acceptable. Because before, the norm was if men do care work, they are like, you know, bullied husbands, or they're not.
It's emasculated.
Yeah, it's it undermines the masculinity. So if that is changed, then that's a very big progress. That's a big leap in making care work more distributed responsibility. And hopefully more supported by policy.
Yeah. When you were doing, when you were conducting the survey, what were the reasons being given to you by the men that were part of the survey?
Well, there were different reasons. One, that they were more home-based, that they've lost jobs. Basically, it revolves around that, because that's those are the big changes that the pandemic brought, the economic side of jobs being lost and businesses closing, and more work being done from home, either because of being unemployed or because work modalities shifted, and also the schoolwork being done online at the same time.
But Lot, when you talk about a while ago, you said it is work, right? It's there are some who are still of the belief that, you know, it's not work if you love doing it, right? So how do you get through
these people who have such a notion without really, you know, eroding the love that is put into whatever it is that they do. Because, for example, us, we're working, but we also do, as you said, we still do a lot of things outside work, things that we love to do for the family, but you're correct in saying that it's still work. So this survey, is the survey's goal to sort of show women that, or take away the love that is going into the care that they're providing? Is that sort of the goal there? Or what do you want women to see in the results of this survey?
I think, first of all, we want to show how valuable care work is. Like I said, it's the work that makes other work possible. And because it's valuable, it has to be supported, to be done properly, and to be done not at the expense of the women who do it. Because the survey also showed that there's a big number of women who in the last 6 months have suffered injuries or illnesses because of the care work that they have to do. And I don't think it detracts from the love for something that we do if there is proper support for it, right? Because it just makes sure that we do it properly and we do it in a way that doesn't harm the person who does it. And, you know, the experience we've seen, for instance, in the communities that we worked with in Eastern Visayas on how women can be supported to do their care work. Because let's imagine these communities. These are rural communities. Women have to walk, you know, even dangerous roads just to collect water for the family. And they've had illnesses because of that. And they've fallen down slopes in stormy weather and so on. So they have to be supported for that. And that's what the government did was to build laundry points closer to women's to families' homes so that women don't have to travel very far to collect water. Things like that, simple things like that.
Yeah, and look, this is not just, you know, the results of this survey is not just for the women, for the support system to see, but for the women themselves to realize their value. Because I've done stories in the past wherein the women that I've interviewed thought that they were doomed to a life of poverty, that they were doomed to this life that they live, and they weren't even wanting for a way out. It's just a reality that they accept. But you're saying there's a better reality out there, one that could be beneficial to them as well.
Yes, that's really the role that social norms plays, right, in our life, in our belief system. That, you know, we need to have that space to reflect on the realities that we have, to reflect on how we can change it so that things can be better. And that goes for, in the issue of care work, that goes, like you said, not just for men to reflect on their roles, but for women too, to understand how, you know, how a family can do better. Like you mentioned earlier, it starts from a very young age. Another thing that the survey found was that indeed the socialization about care work, it starts from a very young age, because what we saw was that girl children in the home do twice as much care work as boys in the same family, right? Mm-hmm. So as early as the early years of a girl, she's already it's already normalized that she has to do more of the care work than her brothers.
Yeah. So sorry to cut you there, but then now we go back to the point you were trying to make earlier about changing the norms, and this whole pandemic having an intergenerational effect. This is the perfect situation now, because the young boys see their fathers now sharing in the care work. Might this be the track that's to be followed even post the pandemic? Because this can be an opportunity.
That is our hope, that this change in household dynamics that are sort of forced upon families by the circumstances leads to a change that will last and that will be supported even by policy. And you know, this survey, I have to mention, this is not an Oxfam initiative alone. We worked on this with the Philippine Commission on Women. And I'm very hopeful because the Philippine Commission on Women is, you know, showing its leadership for the government and for the country as a whole to understand this issue of care work and how it can be better recognized and better supported for the good of women, and that translates into the good of the family as a whole and the country as a whole. Because the redistribution of care work also has knock-on effects on how a woman is able to take on economic opportunities, not just for the family, but for herself as well. And also has knock-on impacts on her health and her well-being more generally.
Yeah. So as we wrap up this conversation, we're talking about policy. What kind of policies must be shaped to support? We're talking about support system as well. I want to know about, you know, possible policies that can make this the norm, help support this to be the norm, even when the pandemic is long gone.
Maybe I'll share an example from the experience that we have working with local governments in Eastern Visayas and Mindanao, where the local governments, upon recognizing the value of care work and how it should be more distributed, shared more equitably, they themselves adopted local policy such that there would be budgetary allocations for investments that would help women reduce the burden of care work. So I gave an earlier example about making water facilities more accessible to women, having daycare centers that are more operational, more effective, so that women have less of the burden of looking after their children for the whole day. And examples like that about allocating budgets for to invest to reduce the burden of care work on women, and eventually then shaping how care work is viewed, and therefore making the changes more lasting and sustainable.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Lot Feliz Codere, Country Director of Oxfam Philippines. Always a pleasure talking to you. Continue to take care, Lot. Keep safe.
You too, Carmina. Thank you very much.
All right, from there, local pump price is set to go up again for a fourth consecutive week. Starting tomorrow, Tuesday, motorists will see gasoline prices go up by 75 centavos per liter, while diesel will cost 70 centavos more per liter. Kerosene prices will have the same price adjustments. Some sports action before we go. The high-flying Atlanta Hawks stunned the top-seeded Philadelphia 76ers to reach the NBA's conference finals. The Hawks shocked thousands of fans in Philadelphia as they won the series, clinching Game 7, 103-96. It was the third time the Hawks won on the Sixers' home court in this best-of-seven affair, which many experts predicted Philadelphia to win. Atlanta star Trae Young went through a tough shooting night, but still finished with 21 points, including a clutch three-pointer. This will be the Hawks' first appearance in the Eastern Conference Finals since 2015. They will face Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks beginning in Game 1. That's happening on Wednesday. And over in the Western Conference Finals, Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns continued to shine. Booker recorded his first career triple-double as he led the Suns to a 120-114 Game 1 victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. Booker ran rings around the Clippers' offense, finishing with 40 points, 13 rebounds, and 12 assists. He was the Suns' facilitator on offense as they played without all-star point guard Chris Paul, who is out due to COVID-19 health protocols. Paul George led the Clippers with 34 points. And of course, we got to talk about this. The Philippine national team, Gilas Pilipinas, beats South Korea again in the FIBA Asia Cup 2021 qualifiers, 82-77. The win gives Gilas an unblemished record in Group A after six games. Dwight Ramos led the way for Gilas, scoring 19 points. Gilas will next fly to Indonesia for the FIBA Asia Cup, which will take place in August. One of Gilas' rising stars, SJ Belanghel, credits their composure to the team's bonding time inside a bubble.
Sobrang iba siya. Kasi parang focus ka lang talaga sa basketball, tapos rest, tapos pahinga, ay pahinga, tapos kain, tapos basketball na naman ulit. Yung chemistry namin is we just step aside our egos. So, dun talaga pinakauna namin na ginawa is grabe talaga yung practice namin. It's a no-joke talaga na practice. As in, seryosong seryoso.
Catch Mix Bustos' interview with SJ Belanghel of Gilas Pilipinas on ANC Conversations on Saturday. That's at 9 in the morning. Meantime, we have this just in. A number of former senators are joining next year's senatorial race. Let's get details now from our correspondent, Sherianne Torres. Sherianne, go ahead. What else can you tell us?
Yeah, Carmina, there are five former senators who will be joining the senatorial race next year. That's according to Senate President Vicente Soto III. Soto is also chairman of the Nationalist People's Coalition, names former senators Loren Legarda, Cheese Escudero, Gringo Nasan, Bam Aquino, and JV Ejercito as those gunning for the Senate post again. Legarda is currently serving as Antique representative, Escudero as governor of Sorsogon province, and Honasan as secretary of the Department of Information and Communications Technology. According to Soto, the NPC will support candidacy of the named returning senators with Honasan as their adopted candidate. Aquino, meantime, will be running under the Liberal Party, according to Soto. Aside from the five, Carmina, the NPC, according to Soto, is also looking at pushing the candidacy of re-electionist senators Sherwin Gachalian, who is a party member, and adopting senators Joel Villanueva, Mig Zubirin, and Richard Gordon, if the latter will finally decide to run again for the Senate, in contrast to his earlier pronouncements of running for the presidency. Pending the permission of the Interagency Task Force, Soto and Senator Panfilo Lacson, that is, in the event that they will really finally join the presidential and vice presidential race, will also choose to directly talk to the people via town hall meetings or consultations in exchange of the usual motorcade and meeting the avance. Soto says they are also seriously considering offering a senatorial lineup to the electorate composed of his mentioned re-electionists and returning senators. According to Soto, his camp is already seriously considering this kind of option and is trying to work out on this. Back to you, Carmina.
All right. Interesting story right there. Sherianne Torres, thanks for joining us today. Keep safe. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.